Hello, and welcome to another episode of Art and Labor. We are the podcast dedicated to the ongoing struggle to survive as an art and or cultural worker. I'm Lucia Love.
And I'm OK Fox.
And we have a reading series episode for you, so...
You know. And we're drinking whiskey and Thai iced tea together.
Yeah, and we're drunk. Yeah, it just like hit me. If you listen to the snack cast, you can hear the... We discovered this, I think. I'm going to just say, Nobody's ever done this before.
It's really good. Spiced rum and Thai iced tea.
Yeah, it's called the Thai Russian.
It's really good.
Yeah, I don't know why it's Russian. There's no vodka in here, but it's like a white Russian. Yeah. It's called the Thai Sailor.
Thai Sailor, that's good.
I don't know. It's all good. It's so stupid.
Well, I recommend it. Tell us what we're reading today.
Okay, so I've got an essay here. It's from, it is on the Selva Journal, and I just want to read what Selva is. It's an open access peer-reviewed journal of the history and historiography of art. We aim to move beyond the discipline's present impasses by going to the roots of art historical method. In this sense, our project is radical. The journal excavates previous iterations of art history and also serves as a vantage point from which to survey live problems in aesthetics, politics, and theory. And it goes on. But yeah, it's awesome. Very well researched. Also... great lefty history combined with art.
Really
so
cool.
This one in particular, I really appreciated. The title is called Painting as Theoretical Practice, Althusser and Support Surface. And Support Surface is this painting movement that has been kind of like nudging its way into American consciousness. And it's like, it's really hard to get the history down because a lot of the writing about it and a lot of the thinkers that supported the movement haven't been translated until pretty recently. So, and we'll kind of get into it with the reading, but a lot of like the Clement Greenberg camp also worked to suppress the idea that movements coming from Paris in general had any agency.
Damn.
Yeah, so they have that strike against them. It's like Greenberg literally just going, art doesn't even come from France anymore. Like, he's just like that dismissive about it. I don't know if that was like, I guess that was like after his Trotsky days.
Yeah, probably.
He kind of maybe he got a little weird when he joined the CIA.
Yeah, as they do.
Yeah. So there's the strike against them there, and then there's this like whole thing about them like deconstructing painting that gets into other theoretical modes of production where a lot of like New York school people were kind of, you know, they were like piggybacking off of minimalism and the destruction of the object and like the recreation of form and like all this really heady stuff that buries the lead on the fact that the Support Surface movement was Marxist as fuck. Which is also a strike against them because they didn't focus on selling.
Right.
So they were like focused on community, and their community was based on like how theory meets practice. And like, and how can you like work with everyone to teach each other about like the balance of that?
So it's like using art as a method for like community building and. Or something?
Yeah, and well, community building, it sort of, yeah, like, because they have a, like, a Maoist cornerstone built into their,
cool.
into their theory. Yeah, yeah so, yeah, it, right? It's yeah. like, so, they have that community
basis. I mean, he's
basis.
Like the self-crit master, right?
Totally.
It makes sense for artists to...
Yeah.
Get into Mao, I think.
But I mean, it's funny the way they did it, and we'll see it in the essay, because it is cool. A little bit like, I don't know, what I would want people to pick up off of this, if I could be so presumptuous, is like...
Dude, you're the teacher here.
Yeah, right? I'm trying it out. Like, come on, everybody.
I love it.
It's like the way that the practice of art always falls short of the revolutionary theory, and the way that, like, inevitably putting your efforts into object making will, like, reconstruct a hierarchy of material instead of, like, helping you to organize along, like, a basis that accepts, like, an entirety of a working class.
Yes.
So they ended up having these, like, crazy rifts between them, the city Parisians, who thought, like, oh, theory is super important, and then, like, the provincials who were, like, we think craft is really important, and building is really important, and making, and action.
That sounds very prescient.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally, like, and they were super before their time, and they also used Althusser as their cornerstone, which I brought, I don't know, I don't think we have time to get into, like, Althusser today, but I brought the book because I'm a dork. And he talks about, like, what philosophy is, and the way that, like, he opens up the book saying that philosophy is an everyday thing, that you actually can be a philosopher, and that's just, like, a part of your life. But then there's capital P philosophy, and it's, like, kind of, like, not accepted because it, you know, seems bourgeois.
Yes.
It's like, well, why would you dedicate yourself to idealism when there's a life that you must practice and you must understand, like, some kind of a prosaic knowledge from those activities, whatever they may be. And, like, so the painters involved in Support Surface are just, like, going off of this guy, who also is, like, pretty recently translated into English.
Right.
So, yeah, it's all in the time frame of theory. It's, like, relatively new. But, of course, in, like, the Twitter sphere, it's old as hell. Because it's like, oh, my God, what are even the 60s?
Yeah, the 60s have so many parallels to our time right now. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
So I think this is great. I've never heard of it before, and it always rocks to, like, find some weird little movement that
totally
has been forgotten about.
Yeah, shout out to Adam Henry, actually, who tipped me off to the movement. Because he was in a bunch of, like, so there were some people last year trying to, like, recontextualize the movement with other, like, forms of, like, aestheticism and deconstruction. And so I first heard about it there, and then, like, have been getting more updates on, like, exactly how deep their leftist roots are, which turns out to be, like, deep enough to, what is the water that's water at the bottom of the ocean.
to strike the water.
Yeah, whatever it is. There's like a shelf, there's like a, I don't know the geological term for
mantle.
It, but yeah, when you strike down into the earth and you draw forth the water that you need to survive, it is the leftism that is buried that far under.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, so are we going to read it?
Please.
Let's do it.
Painting is Theoretical Practice, Althusser and Support Surface. In June 1969, Louis Kane, Daniel Dezouz, Patrick Sator, and Claude Viat participated in an exhibition called La Peinture en Question at the Musée du Havre. Along with Vincent Bouillet, sorry, everything's French.
Everything's super French.
Marc Devade, Noël Dola, Jean-Pierre Pinsmin, Bernard Paget, and André Valency, the artists co-authored a catalogue text that stated their principal aesthetic position. The object of painting is painting itself, and the works displayed here only refer to themselves. They make no appeal to an elsewhere, for example, the artist's personality, his biography, the history of art. The artists offered their works as a materialist dissection of the medium of painting. Colored wooden stretchers by Dessus were juxtaposed with Viat's unstretched canvases painted with a repetitive Matissean pattern. Sator also used unstretched canvas, which he had folded and soaked with red paint. Louis Kahn's name in the words artiste peintre, were repeatedly stamped in a grid format on a linen sheet. In all these works, the constitutive elements of painting, support, surface, color, and process, were laid bare in order to prevent mental projections or oneric wanderings. The artist insisted on the neutrality of the works presented, their absence of lyricism and expressive depth.
Though the rejection of individual subjectivity and expressivity asserted in the statement was a goal shared by some of the most prominent tendencies of the 1960s, Europe and American art, including minimalism, pop art, and conceptual art, a markedly different dimension quickly emerged in the works of these French artists. In September 1970, now calling their group Support Surface, Violet's Devad Deluze.
Deluze. Not Deluze, I know.
Not Deluze. I just want to say Deluze. Sator and Valenci and Viat again exhibited an array of cutout and stained canvases, stretches, wooden poles, and fiber grid at the Musée d'Art Moderne de Ville de Paris, newly instituted ARC Animation Research.
Recherche
confrontation, which is shown in figure one. This time, Con Devade Dessuze offered a tract in which they insisted on the Marxist-Leninist political significance of their deconstructive approach to painting. Less than a year later, however, the group would split and essentially dissolve under the tensions created by that very insistence. The resurgence of interest in the work of Support Surface over the past decade has prompted a reassessment of their strident yet opaque political claims. Previously, the tendency had been to ascribe these expressions of militancy to the general atmosphere of revolt that characterized the late 1960s and early 1970s in France and many other parts of the world.
France.
I'm just trying to get into the mode of doing it.
I love it.
Sorry. I took French for like 3 years and I'm trying to channel it, but it's very hard for me.
Yeah, just feel it. Just feel so gay-pery.
While superficially true, this zeitgeist reading is ultimately ahistorical in its abdication of a deeper investigation of the mediations between the political and the aesthetic at this particular juncture. Other recent analyses have attempted to assess the relationship between practice and theory of the group. For example, reading the forms of Support Surface's works as demonstrations of Marxist dialectics. While such approaches move beyond the narrow and depoliticized formalist interpretations by actually taking the artist's theoretical investments seriously, this essay will attempt to explain why a reformulated Marxism, one focusing on questions of ideology with extreme theoretical rigor, appealed to abstract painters in France in the aftermath of the events of May, June 1968. Damn.
Yeah, right?
Fuck.
It's so deep in there.
Sorry, I'm reading this for the first time for people who don't realize.
I'm
obviously reading this for the first time.
Yeah, this is me hipping you to some painting shit. Yeah, painters, you know, you'd think that they were like totally outside of you know, whatever. It's like Althusser is talking about the philosopher with a capital P. You assume that they're outside of everything, but actually they're directly responding to, and in some cases have been like Well, I mean, you know, we'll get into it.
No, and it fucking rocks because, like, yeah, like we were talking about in the intro, like, so many of the abstract expressionist painters in America were fucking CIA adjacent or whatever.
Yeah, and it's a total battle of ideologies, so yeah. It's almost like, you know, the state support for art that we have talked about in previous episodes, mm-hmm. like, will also reinforce the way that we understand, like, culture, the cultural branch of the superstructure.
Totally.
Which then, like, reinforces the hegemony, which then you don't even know, like, oh, well, there are these people that are totally radical and trying to, like, inform object making from this position. And also they're, like, fighting for, like, Algerian independence and stuff. Like,
that you rocks. Know,
it just goes, like, so deep. It's, yeah.
Sorry.
No, I'm so excited. I'm stoked about this stuff. though frequently associated with Maoism, supports Surface's political and theoretical investments like those of many French leftists who felt the wind from the east.
Damn.
spicy. were prompted by their encounter with the writings of philosopher Louis Althusser.
You did it.
From the early 1960s, Althusser's groundbreaking readings of Marx were avidly followed by a new generation of intellectuals, activists, and artists yearning for more rigorous analyses than those offered by the then-prevailing mixture of existentialism, late surrealism, and philosophical Marxism. While Althusser's influence in the intellectual field has been well surveyed, his impact on artistic practice of the 1960s and 1970s remains underappreciated. Until now.
Damn.
His limited and infrequent writings on art further deflect attention away from the broader effects his more theoretical works had on artistic practices with which he was not directly involved.
Do the next one.
Okay. Support Surface grappled with Althusser's writings, finding in them a justification for painting as a critical praxis at a moment when painting's aesthetic and social raison d'etre had appeared to many commentators as exhausted. At the same time, this act of translation from the theoretical to the visual demanded a supplementary textual production by the artist that became at least as important as the production of actual paintings. The terms of this endeavor were set forth on the occasion of the ARC exhibition of September 1970 in the so-called Green Tract issued by Kane, Devad, and D'Azuze, which insisted that painting must base itself on theoretical practice, itself articulated in social practice, the class struggle. Evoking Althusser's notion of semi-autonomous levels of class struggle, the text argued that a coherent group linked to the national and international struggle for people's liberation can, at the level of this specific practice that is painting, exist only by the systematic elimination of any subjective practice. This was followed by a calculation of the price of each artist's painting based on materials, manual labor, intellectual labor, and tax, a strategy to signal the imbrication of painting within a capitalist economy and demystify its value.
Oh, shit. Wait. That's crazy because, like, when we started Disclaimer, we had, like, really similar ideals about, like,
how you would actually break down what goes into art.
Yeah, if you, like, art, like, sorry, I keep hitting the symbol.
We're in a very small room, and we're surrounded by drums and cymbals. And now Joey is taking away the cymbal so that OK can gesticulate excitement.
Should I take away the drum, too?
No, you're fine. My friends and I started a gallery collective called Disclaimer, and our whole mission statement was based on, like, we're just going to tell people how much it costs to run a gallery, and that's what the gallery is.
And that's the disclaimer.
Yeah, and that's the disclaimer.
Yeah.
That rocks.
Yeah.
I wish I'd read this.
Well, here you go. better late than never. I think it's a common effort, though, that a lot of artists and creatives will undergo. Like, I just I also have an essay. Maybe we can read it at another time, but it's the surplus value of art.
Mm.
And it talks about, again, like breaking down the way that it's not necessarily the, you know, it's not like a, it's not as clear cut and economic discovery, like follow the money in art or something.
Yeah.
It's more like, oh, we're valuing social capital in a certain way. And totally. You can produce these sort of like Marxist ethics in a small community, but that doesn't necessarily like challenge capital because no. there are these different kind of isolated groups that are like acting in parallel.
Totally. It's so small. It's like a throwing a rock in a pond. It's like, I don't know. It's like a drop in the bucket. I don't know.
Well, it's like operating on your own personal ethics.
Yeah.
And knowing that like that might not resonate with anyone.
I think when we wrote the disclaimer, we were thinking a lot about feminist theory and like the personal is political type of sentiment for sure.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Oh, well, up until recently, it was just almost impossible to be included in the hegemony as a woman
totally.
Or like femme person.
Yeah, totally.
But then even now, there's so much devaluing going on still.
Absolutely. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry to derail.
That's cool. I'm drunk.
Yeah, I know. You're like, you're at number 12.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah. Sweet. However, unlike the contemporaneous work of many conceptual artists, the text or statistical information produced by artists associated with support surface were not themselves treated as artworks. This distinction was key to support surface Althusserian definition of painting as an object of knowledge, that is, as a theoretical practice distinct from the material or technical practice of painting as a real object. An artistic practice could be a theoretical practice, in Althusser's sense, if it produced knowledge about its own ideological status. The artists of support surface resolved to meet this challenge. In addition to catalog essays, tracts, and open letters accompanying the few official support surface exhibitions, the primary venue for such writings was the journal Penitentiaire Cahier Theoretique.
You did it.
Nailed established, it. thank you. Established in 1970 by Vincent Boullier, Marc Devad, Louis Cain, and Daniel Dazouz, who together made up the Paris-based faction of the group. So there's them thinkers.
Damn. All right. So beyond acknowledging the role of Althusser's writings played in support surface's approach to painting, his appeal for abstract painters attests to the ways in which the breakdown of both artistic modernism and the French left became intertwined circa 1970. The political claims made for these aesthetic practices, so crucial to the artists at the time, remain opaque without a deeper historical understanding of this dynamic and the complex debates regarding the relationships between theory and practice, politics and philosophy, and ideology and science that Althusser formulated for his followers. Above all, what appealed to those members of support surface drawn to Althusser was the philosopher's rigorous anti-humanism. Okay, rigorous anti-humanism.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Although Althusser subjected many of his most rigorous positions to self-criticism by the late 1960s, the artists of support surfaces selected what they needed from his corpus that would help them distance painting from a humanist ideology of art. This mode of engagement would at times pit competing interpretations or facets of Althusser's theory against one another within the group. And then I'll start the next, this is number two, this the next yeah. part of the essay.
Do it, yeah.
All right, I'm going to do it.
I'll read it.
1956 was a watershed year for the French left.
Yes.
The acknowledgement of Stalin's atrocities at the 20th Congress of the Soviet Communist Party, the USSR's suppression of the Hungarian uprising later that year, and the French Communist Party PPCF lackluster support for Algerian independence prompted the defection of scores of intellectuals and increased calls for reforms within the party. The fallout also triggered the search for non-communist models of leftism amongst French radicals. The Sino-Soviet split of 1961, when diverging national interests and doctrinal disputes prompted the Chinese Communist Party to sever relations with the Soviet Union, exacerbated tensions within the French left that would ultimately climax in 1968, baby.
Yeah. So this is crazy because they're divorcing themselves from like the Camus style of dealing with things where they're like, I'm just gonna revel in my like alienation as the stranger and like shoot an Algerian and like see how it feels or whatever.
Oh shit.
But like this is like really meaningful to me to like dissect that in a narrative where I live experientially and these people are like, actually no.
Yeah. Yeah, we're French and no.
And
no.
Mais no. Against the calls to reform the PCF through more humanistic and liberal interpretations of Marx, Althusser insisted that the only way to free both Marxism and the party, with a capital P, from the legacy of Stalin was through an extreme insistence on the scientific validity of Marx's late writings. In the essay on the young Marx, which appeared in the March-April 1961 issue of La Pensée, Althusser criticized the recent tendency of Marxist philosophers to recuperate the early writings of Marx as essentially a philosophy of man and his liberation. Althusser argued the opposite of agreed, that an epistemological break existed between Marx's early works, which he regarded as still saturated with bourgeois ideology, and his later works, starting with the German ideology and developed further with Capital. These mature works, he argued, detached themselves from ideology and established a new scientific discipline capable of objectively describing the structure of historical development without recourse to a human subject positioned as its engine or telos. At this stage, Althusser conceived of ideology in terms of a certain unity governing the questions that can be posed in any field of knowledge, giving it an apparent consistency. The structure of this unity, however, is not conscious of itself, and it is this lack of consciousness that constitutes ideology.
Mm-hmm. Althusser refined this argument in a series of essays included in the 1965 collection For Marx. Notably, in these essays, Althusser enlarged the scope of the concept of ideology from an epistemological problematic to a phenomenon that encapsulated the imaginary relation between men and their real conditions of existence. In particular, the essay Marxism and Humanism attacked the conception of personal freedom as an ideology obscuring the scientific understanding of history and society offered by Marx's theoretical anti-humanism. By introducing categories of analysis such as social formation, productive forces, relations of production, superstructure, ideologies, and determination in the last instance by the economy, specific determination of other levels, etc., Althusser claimed that Marx moved beyond his earlier philosophical preoccupation with discovering and realizing the essence of man. According to Althusser, it is impossible to know anything about men except on the absolute precondition that the philosophical (theoretical) myth of man is reduced to ashes. It is precisely this attack on the myth of man that would captivate a number of French artists dissatisfied with the increasingly Dale Gestures of Post-Cubist Modernist Painting. And then I'll continue into point number three of the essay. Throughout the 1950s, the French government and the art market promoted expressive gestural styles often grouped under the umbrella category of art informel. While some of this work was figurative, it prioritized the spontaneous painterly touch in ways similar to American abstract expressionism. The apotheosis of the newly established Fifth Republic's endorsement of a humanist ideology of art was the first peri-biennial organized by the recently appointed Minister of Culture, André Malraux, in October 1959, held at Musée d'Art Moderne and limited to artists under the age of 35. The French contribution was dominated by various forms of abstract painted practice at the time, as well as a selection of works by masters of the École de Paris produced before they reached age 35, including Bonnard, Derain, Matisse, Baroque, Picasso, Modigliani, Sautrine. Malraux proclaimed at the opening, "Now we have the proof here that painting is what painters make of it. Freedom has henceforth been attained in the domain of art." The operation performed by Malraux and the biennial was therefore twofold. One was to establish the preeminence of the École de Paris within the post-war debates between abstraction and figuration that characterized French art. The other was to associate painterly abstraction with freedom and the aesthetic autonomy of modern art.
Okay, so I just have to, like, this part blows my mind because of the way the painting landscape looks right now and, like, how we've been really steeped in figurative abstraction for a while. Mm-hmm. That is just the height. It's like everything is gestural. Everything is like abstract, yet narrative, yet figurative. Yet it's just like kind of a weird hodgepodgey aesthetic that is also like quoting Rousseau and quoting Matisse as like inspiration. And it's like, there's this kind of, I mean, obviously it's waning now, but there's like kind of a hard line anti-political bent.
Right. Like, it just feels like pluralism based on people's like preconceived notions of what the canon is or something. And just it, like nothing.
It's like getting lost in mannerist navel gazing and that becoming a politics of self and being like, oh, if we focus on individual endeavors, but then like toe ever so slightly into the waters of feminism and just like make a big show of.
Yeah. Make it
shutting out white dudes, like and now we're like doing enough. And if we let women, like, or you know, or maybe like if they're like outwardly gay or something, like it's like a lot of identity, a lot of individualism, a lot of like atomized work that then sort of like devolves.
It's almost like this pragmatism was adopted as like a well, nothing of political value is happening here, so we might as well get in some women and people of color into this.
No, I think it's actually manufactured at a point where people.
That's true too.
Yeah, I agree. Think it's not like, oh, there's nothing going on. I can't even see that there are protests happening outside of the new museum.
Right.
And like, no, there's the streets are filled with people right now, as they were at this time.
No, there's something deeply cynical happening too.
And the state responds by funding the same kinds of art. And I know it's different, a different time, and nobody is really like, it's very conspiratorial to think that way, but like,
I don't think so at all. I think that's what art form is doing, for example, by hiring David Velasco and toting him around as this progressive beacon. And
yeah, exactly. You know, it's like,
meanwhile, hiding
it's
all
like
the shit.
You're able, and then, oh my God, the Swiss Institute just like did this whole performance with like sex workers where basically it just lined up a bunch of people and they all wore these shirts that just was like I'm a sex worker. But the whole idea was it was amazing because they have different shaped bodies.
What's the leftist way to say virtual signaling?
Oh,
did we figure this out already or no?
I don't know. I thought that was just the umbrella term.
I think virtue signaling is problematic because a right-wing guy coined it, but...
Well, I think...
I think it applies.
It applies, yeah. Virtue signaling is real, and the opposite is vice noise.
Okay, continue.
This cultural campaign by the French state occurred during the bloody peak of the Algerian War for Independence, which officially lasted from 1954 to 1962 and caused the collapse of the Fourth Republic in 1958. Hannah Feldman has argued that Malraux's promotion of art informel under the supposedly autonomous and universal category of style worked to silence history in a manner directly analogous to the French state's silencing of war crimes committed during the Algerian War. More immediately, however, the association of informel painting with the École de Paris and therefore with an implicitly national legacy of modernism at a time when the definition of the nation was being deeply contested, prompted many leftist artists to reject, if not directly criticize, the legacy and its ideology of individual expression. Throughout the conflict, the PCF had supported Algerian independence in word, but not in deed. Beep beep Syria.
Damn, yeah, that rocks.
During the Fourth Republic's final years, the PCF made it clear that they prioritized national political standing over anti-colonial opposition through actions such as their 1956 approval of special war powers to the Guy Mollet government. As the war ground on into the Fifth Republic, and as reports of torture and extreme right-wing terrorism split the nation, the PCF became more outspoken proponents of full independence. However, for many on the left, particularly students, intellectuals, and artists, it was too little, too late. In their eyes, the PCF was little better than the Gaullist state of which it sought to become an official part.
This critique extended to cultural matters as well. Though the PCF had maintained an official policy of socialist realism, it welcomed and benefited from the membership of modern artists such as Picasso, Ligère, and Paul Rabeaurolais. When the pressure to de-Stalinize mounted in 1956, the party held up these artists as evidence of its tolerance and liberalism. These theoretical and cultural attempts by reformers to humanize the Communist Party started to appear congruous with the Gaullist state's own promotion of cultural values at the beginning of the 1960s. This convergence is key to understanding the role of Althusser would come to play for a new generation of artists committed to recovering a revolutionary potential for art. 1965 was a particularly significant year for Althusser. Both For Marx and Reading Capital were published, causing an immediate sensation in intellectual circles in France. In For Marx, Althusser denounced humanist freedom as an ideology lived and manifested through a system of mass representations. Althusser's suggestion that the system of representations sustaining the ideology of freedom included images, myths, ideas, or concepts, depending on the case, appealed to artists who were critical of art informel's compatibility with a bourgeois conception of freedom. At the same time, Althusser's insistence that ideology was an inescapable component of social life sanctioned those same artists' adherence to interrogation of an artistic medium associated with bourgeois culture, particularly at a time when Euro-American neo-avant-garde was reviving the project of merging art with everyday life through strategies of appropriation, dematerialization, and performance, support Serfoss's steadfast rejection of such approaches found reinforcement in Althusser's claim that... You read it.
Okay, I'm
here's a direct quote from Althusser.
Only... because I'm just trying to pretend to be Althusser. I don't know what he sounds like. I think he sounds like a man.
He's French.
Yeah. Only an ideological world outlook could have imagined societies without ideology and accepted the utopian idea of a world in which ideology, not just one of its historical forms, would disappear without a trace, to be replaced by science.
Ooh.
For example, this utopia is the principle behind the idea that art could merge with knowledge or become everyday life.
Hmm.
All right, so art merging with knowledge is really trippy to me because at SVA there was a push in the fine arts department to make art that would produce knowledge, but it was like this weird kind of mixture of like, oh, but it has to also involve a scientific component.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this whole like conflation is like,
I remember that when I was in school too, because we were in school at like the same time, and I wasn't in the painting department at Purchase, but I remember the painting department had a distinct like, you have to merge science with your painting.
Yeah, it was like if you're not using technology, then you have to use science. And as a result, there were a bunch of kids that were just like growing mold in these studios on like 18th Street, and they got shut down because I guess there was like salmonella on everything or something, like
and some kid like used his semen or something.
Oh my god, they're always using cum. Yeah,
they love to do that.
Watch it with your cum, you guys. It's fun to do at home. Support Serfoss's use of quotidian materials, not cum. They didn't use cum, they used other everyday things. And exploration of exhibitionary possibilities, but not cum. Definitely not. Outside institutional contexts, such as their outdoor installations in the southern French countryside, courted the false sublation Althusser attributed to ideology. Namely, the merging of art with everyday life. However, their almost agonizingly relentless textual accompaniment to that visual production operated as much to prevent the appearance of such a naive faith as it did to help explicate the work. Furthermore, several of the members of Support Serfoss had fought in the Algerian War, while for others, the war had marked the awakening of their political consciousness. Curator Bernard Cesson, an early supporter and collector of Support Serfoss, has argued that the experience of the war fueled the artist's polemical and contentious approach to painting. Instead of rejecting abstract painting completely in favor of either figuration or ready-made strategies, however, as a number of politically inclined artists in France began to do during the 1960s, the artists of Support Serfoss dug deep into the material components of painting, breaking them down, disassembling them, serializing them in order to take a position against an individualistic conception of art associated with informel painting. This could be done in an ironic vein, as with the cane stamping Louis Cane, Artiste Peintre, across a linen sheet, thereby bringing together the repetition of radically simplified visual motifs associated, for example, with the artists of the group BMPT, with a kind of industrial branding technique. It could also be accomplished through various materializations of the grid in fiber, viat, Valency, wood, Desus, or Grand, or on stained or folded canvas, Arnal and Devad. Some adhered to the format of the stretched canvas but sought to avoid compositional and formal decisions by, in the case of You got it. For example, applying masking tape to the surface of the painting parallel to the edges and removing it after applying color to the entire surface. Deconstructive strategies were also explored by situating everyday materials in simple forms in the outdoor environment or landscape, such as bouillet, resting a series of painted wooden poles against the walls of buildings in the provincial village of Coraz, because there's no accent on the E.
I think you're good.
Accent aigu. So, like, old-ass French lessons.
I know, right?
They're like, what fucking... There's no fucking accent. French. So you don't say the end of the word, right?
I think you're good.
The provincial village of Coraz, in summer of 1970.
Most fundamental, however, to the rejection of artistic individualism was the formation of group identity. This is perhaps the most important function of the text produced by Supports Surface. Since each work that was exhibited was still associated with individual artists, each of whom had their signature materials and methods, the corresponding statements, generally either anonymous or attributed to the group, served to collectivize authorship under a common theoretical program. They opened their most programmatic text, Positions du Groupe Support Surface, written for the exhibition at Cité Universitaire in Paris, May 1971, by asserting that the work presented on the occasion of this second Support Surfaces exhibition is the result of theoretical research and collective work. Ooh, love that. Artists, groups, and collectives proliferated in Western Europe during the 1960s as an antidote to what was seen as ideologically suspect, if not politically complicit, cult of individuality in post-war art. Support Surfaces' definition of the collective endeavor as not simply collaboration in the making and exhibiting of objects, but also on theoretical research, echoed in the rhetoric of many 1960s and 70s European groups, such as Groupe de Recherche d'Art Visuel, GRAV, the N Group, the Salon de la Jeune Peinture, and the Collectif d'Art Sociologique. Though what precisely constituted theory and research varied significantly from group to group, in the post-May 68 period in France, the formation of artist groups paralleled and sometimes intersected with the search for alternative models of political collectivity on the extreme left in the form of so-called groupuscules, organized around particular theoretical
groupuscules.
groupuscules?
Yeah, sounds like pimples.
It does. Organized around particular theoretical orientations or specific issues. The formation of such groups was accelerated by what many on the left perceived as the conservatism of the PCF during May 68 uprising. And yet, one of the apparent ironies of the political trajectory of Support Surfaces was that its members who were politically and geographically closest to the May events, Cain, Devad, Deluze, actually drew closer to the PCF in its immediate aftermath. For despite the supposedly counter-revolutionary role played by the communists in the events of May 68, there was a surge in attempts by activists and intellectuals to renew the party's revolutionary mission during these years. For many of these partisans, Althusser was crucial insofar as he represented a heterodoxic current within the PCF, taking it to task for perceived divinations from the class struggle. Daniel D'Azuzé later attributed to the radicalization of his faction's more direct experience of the political ferment of the May events from the schism in the group between the moderate provincials and the leftists in the capital.
This tension was exasperated by the collective texts a later dated June 14th, 1971. Oh, a letter. Sorry. Everybody's drunk.
Oh, boy. We're doing it.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're just still doing it. A letter dated June 9th. Okay, all right, all right, all right. Please, find this charming. A letter dated June 14th, 1971, and signed by members associated with the provincial faction Noel Dola, Tony Grand, Patrick Saitor, André Valenci, and Claude Viat, announced the disintegration of Support Surface as a result of the Paris group's arbitrary use of theory separated from practice. The authors of the letter adopt a distinctly Althusserian critique by citing the failure of the other members to consider the complex unity of ideological practice, political practice, and theoretical practice. A letter signed by Arnaud Boyer, Ken Devad, and Dezouz, dated June 15, 1971, accuses the rival faction of playing their little provincial games far from the ideological struggle occurring in Paris. They counter with their own Althusserian assertion that historical materialism and dialectical materialism are not merely political watchwords, but determine the level of signifying practice, a work on history and a work on painting as an object of knowledge, not a real object, material, or gadget. The crucial distinction between painting as an object of knowledge and painting as a real object was, as noted above, based on Althusser's definition of theoretical practice as a specific form of practice that works on raw material, representations, concepts, facts, which it is given by other practices, whether empirical, technical, or ideological. Theoretical practice transforms such raw material into the product knowledge. Thus, to treat painting as an object of knowledge meant stepping away from any notion of expression premised on the spontaneous engagement with materials, techniques, and objects, instead confronting painting as an ideology. By defending the use of dialectical materialism, the Paris-based group was following Althusser's justification of precisely what the others had criticized as a separation of theory from practice. According to Althusser, dialectical materialism was the theory of theoretical practice, that is, an explanation of the structure and development of any practice that produces knowledge. He specifically noted its necessity to disciplines such as art because it offered the sole method that can anticipate their theoretical practice by drawing up its formal conditions.
You finish off.
Almost 50 years later, these back-and-forth letters between the Parisian and provincial members of Support Surface read like a parody of the factionalism within extreme leftist groups of the period.
Number four.
However, closer attention to the specificity of the political context in France after 1968 helps illuminate the reasons for a spat between artists over the proper interpretation of Althusserian theory and helps explain the group's trajectory through the Communist Party.
The PCF's overriding goal over the course of the 1960s had been to form a coalition of leftist parties in order to secure electoral dominance. This meant forging an alliance with the socialists, a venture that ultimately came to fruition with the 1972 formation of the Union de la Gauche. Althusser was deeply critical of the reformist maneuvers of the PCF took to achieve the union, such as the abandonment of commitment to the dictatorship of the proletariat and to the affirmation of the democratic path to socialism. Oh boy. Althusser's Althusser's disapproval of the party's abandonment of what he deemed a properly revolutionary orientation had already triggered his theoretical break with the official party orthodoxy prior to 1968 and dragged what many intellectuals would with him towards a left anti-Stalinism that would, for some, lead to Maoism.
But yo, I mean, Rosa Luxemburg reform or revolution, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Dude, right there. Put a pin on that right there.
Boom.
thus, rather than the events of May 68 or anything happening internationally prompting leftist defection from communism, it was the Union de la Gauche and its common program that ultimately convinced many French leftists of the incorrigibility of the PCF. This may partly account for the seeming irony of artists such as Kahn, Devade, and De Zuze joining the PCF after May and proclaiming their fidelity before, in the words of De Zuze, quickly exiting it on its left. Once it appeared impossible to transform this sieve of a party... Very good. The left exit referred to here as the Maoist one that prompted the breakup of support surfaces in 1971-72, as De Zuze would later note, what was typically attributed to the geographical divide between Paris and the provinces was in fact a political schism between those artists who were seduced by the social democratic platform of the Union de la Gauche and those associated with peinture Cassier theoretiques who preserved in their efforts towards radical contestation. It is not inaccurate, therefore, to see the disagreements over the applicability of Marxist-Leninist theories to the practice of painting as a proxy for debates occurring within the political sphere of the left at the time in France. However, such disputes were understood to have material consequences for the capacity of painting to operate as an object of knowledge. Support Serfassus's reading of Althusser mandated an art which acknowledged and confronted its nature as ideology within bourgeois society rather than purporting to transcend that nature through practices of provocative or affirmative identity with non-art objects, practices, or spaces. Occasionally, this involved drawing on Althusser to question the group's attempts to evade institutional settings. In his critical contribution to the catalog for Et 70, an exhibition in which the group installed works in various outdoor locations along the Mediterranean coast, Patrick Sator noted that relocation to non-art sites vacated the works' specificity and thus their intelligibility. He included the following quotation from Althusser's introduction to Reading Capital. "Our age threatens to one day appear in the history of human culture as marked by those dramatic and difficult trial of all, the discovery and training in the meaning of the simplest acts of existence, seeing, listening, speaking, reading, the acts which relate men to their works, oeuvres, and those works thrown in their faces, their absences of works." Sator concludes that with plein air display of their works, this operation was not perceived, recounting the ways their installations were mistaken by the public variously for a film set, an obstacle course, airplane signals, or a volleyball net.
Just a bunch of everyday shit, you know?
It does look like a volleyball net.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
There's a picture, y'all.
So quotidien. Des vues. Thank you. Sator's recourse to Althusser in the context of identifying what he sees as the defects of attempting to free art from established institutional spaces is particularly telling. One of the characteristic challenges posed by protesters during and after the events of May 68 was to the autonomy and separation of different sites. Whether it was the distance between the factory and the university, or between the museum and the street, or between the first and third world, rebellious students, workers, artists and other militants sought to transcend the divisions inscribed in modern French social practice. This put many of Althusser's own followers at odds with the philosopher's continued adherence to the Communist Party and university apparatus. Althusser, who had been hospitalized for a depressive episode during the May events, grappled with their aftermath but defended the specificity of theory and the distinction between different disciplines. He insisted that it was only by maintaining a rigorous adherence to the theoretical base of a discipline that its particular contribution to the class struggle could be realized. A reader, particularly an American one, might here detect a whiff of Clement Greenberg. At least in Greenberg's early critical writings, the insistence on formalist self-reflexivity was linked to a Marxist class politics, an alignment that T.J. Clark would later famously formulate as Eliotic Trotskyism. Many of the support surface artists, particularly Marc Dévad and Daniel Dessouz, were the most avid readers of Greenberg amongst French artists of the time, and I don't know how you can make a claim like that, and one might be tempted to characterize their reception of the American critic as resulting in a kind of Greenbergian Althusserianism. All the quintessential Greenbergian precepts make their appearance in the work of support surface: scrutiny of the medium, autonomy of the aesthetic, avant-garde teleology, but they do so in remarkably unheroic forms, such as Noël Dola's polka-dotted linen dishcloths hanging limply on the wall, or Daniel Dessouz's fiberglass ladders that lie crumpled on the ground. Fucking ladders. Yeah, at Family Business, we had a show that had a ladder in it, and they just sent directions to make it, and I had to make it, so I, like, taught myself how to weld on the spot.
That's a psycho.
I love art. It just, like, it challenges you.
Do this for me and don't be paid for it.
Yeah, it's for expression.
Oh, my God.
But now I know how to weld.
Sick.
Yeah, and it was a crumpled ladder, too. Anyway. Fucking artists and their goddamn crumpled ladders. As if to compensate for the enervated state of their object, support surface turned to the most stridently rigorous theoretical discourse on offer at the moment, one that moreover seemed to justify the political value of such a practice. Support surface's combination of self-reflexive formalism and extreme leftist politics found its literary parallel in the journal Tel Quel, with which it maintained an affiliation. Marceline Planet, the managing editor of Keltel, was the group's primary critical advocate and pushed a Marxist reading of their operations. Mm. The journal's editors and key contributors, such as Planet, Philippe Soleil, Julia Kristeva, Jacques Derrida, who, however, broke with the group around 1971, and Roland Barthes, were opposed to the post-war model of the engagé intellectual personified by Jean-Paul Sartre, instead insisting on the specificity of language and writing. Like support surface in the early 1970s, Tel Quel looked at Althusser to provide the link between modernist formalism and Maoist politics. The association with Tel Quel helps further explain Althusser's appeal for a group of abstract artists. For if Althusser represented anything in the heady intellectual and cultural climate of this period, it was a Marxism of Mandarin seriousness, a kind of extreme formalist Marxism. This also helps to explain why the members of support surface most interested in escaping the confines of the art institution and market, Paget, Sautor, Valency, and Viat, were in fact the least willing to adopt Marxist-Leninist positions.
Number five, almost done. Support surface found inspiration in Althusser's insistence following Lenin that theory is indispensable to revolutionary practice. Indeed, that theory itself is a form of practice that gives rise to other new practices. Moreover, several of the support surface's artists saw in it a justification for the continuation of painting as a theoretical practice, analogous to the continuation of philosophy following Marx's epistemological break with the idealism that, according to Arthur Serre, overdetermined his pre-1848 texts. Arthur Serre's repeated critique of empiricism for mistaking objects of knowledge for real objects, that is, for conflating the theoretical practice with the reality it is sought to explicate, it is applied to artistic practice in support of Serre's texts, such as the collectively written statement for their May 1971 exhibition at Cité Universitaire in Paris. In order to combat the traditional and bourgeois, that is, neurotic and religious conception of art, painting is here presented as means and object of knowledge, inscribed in a process of production of writing, reading, perceptual transformation, and not in as the production of real objects or of attitudes around these objects for use on the market. It is not given here only to be visible. The description of painting as process of production in perceptual transformation is unmistakably based on Althusser's definition of practice as any process of transformation of a determinate given raw material into a determinate product. In the support of Frost's statement, this practice is counterposed to an ideology of expressive objects that invokes critic Pierre Restante's vision, famous characterization of nouveau realism as making visible the real in the aspects of its expressive totality, rather than the presentation of raw material as expressive objects, support surfaces repeatedly insisted on painting as an object of knowledge and not as a real object material gadget.
There it is again.
Oof. Support surfaces repeatedly attacked the gamut of 1960s neo-avant-garde practices for their false solutions to the idealism of traditional pictorialism. In the essay co-written by Kane and D'Azuzé, titled For a Pictorial Theoretical Program, in the first issue of Pieter Cassier's Theoretics, the artists listed as the various ways that conceptual art, land art, pop art, minimalism, and assemblage had all failed to fully contend with the material specificity of their practices.
Here we can grasp a further dimension of the appeal of theoretical anti-humanism, as well as the political stakes for artists who struggled to conceive of art itself as theoretical practice. For Althusser, the attempts to reform the PCF following the upheavals of 1956 threatened to water it down with bourgeois ideology. Theoretical rigor was the necessary antidote. Likewise, for painters who sought to escape from the entrenched categories of expression, spontaneity, and idealism in modernist painting, yet who also scorned neo-avant-garde strategies as mystification, theory offered a way to be both materialists and partisans.
This is the last part, number six.
Oh, yeah. Boom, baby. I'm gonna fall asleep. Rather than prompting a critical evaluation of imperialism, the neo-avant-garde, or the exhibition context support surface, turned its focus inward upon the object and its mode of display. Support surface sought to reveal the material basis of a superstructural signifying practice that anchored the dominant ideology. That this effect could not be achieved or perceived without an equally robust textual production is emblematic not only of the particular impasse that painting confronted after 1968, but also of a French left attempting to counter charges of Stalinism without being co-opted by the Gaullist state. Both Althusser and his followers in support Surface advocated a return to the authentic objects, which are logically and historically prior to the ideology which has reflected them and hemmed them in. For Althusser, this meant abandoning any reference to man and returning to Marx's later works with their analyses of structural formations and relations. Althusser's claim dovetails with support Surfass's attempt to abandon expressive or referential signs in painting and its focus on the medium's constituent elements. If an unstretched canvas or a bare stretcher did not read as class struggle, this was because, as Althusser insisted, the reality of theoretical practice in its concrete life was of a separate order from the reality of the practice of revolutionary struggle in its concrete life. While the former was tasked with drawing a dividing line between true and false ideas, the latter's mission was to draw a dividing line between two antagonistic classes. The artists of Support Surfass, like their literary counterparts at Tel Quel, seized upon such distinctions as justification for a continued formalist interrogation of the signifiers internal to their particular discipline. To mimic the forms taken by the workers' movement in painting would have been the height of the empiricist ideology criticized by Althusser that seeks an unmediated correspondence between historical reality and its expression.
That historical reality has been deeply complicated by the events of May 1968, though the greatest proportion of striking workers in May-June 1968 belonged to the industrial sectors traditionally identified as the working class. They were accompanied by a significant portion of white-collar workers in fields such as media, publishing, and education. In addition to student revolts and occupations.
It's us.
Damn, it's us. Though much of the rhetoric of the movement was Marxist and stridently workerist, the actual attempts by students, artists, and other activists to ally or merge with workers were, on the whole, limited to dubious success. Moreover, the apparently non-revolutionary posture of PCF and main trade unions and the almost total, albeit grudgingly, return to work by the rank and file following the galvanist victory in the June legislative elections left many in France speculating about the recomposition of the traditional working class. The effect within the artistic field was general skepticism towards traditional models of political art, particularly those associated with the PCF or Soviet Union, premised on addressing largely imaginary working class viewer. This skepticism was reflected in ways Support Surfass framed the relationship between their work and the audience. The catalog essay, likely written primarily by Devade, for the April 1971 exhibition at Cité Universitaire in Paris, stated that although historical and dialectical materialism formed the basis of Support Surfass's theory and practice, it was not art for the people. Instead, it was theoretical and ideological weapon for the petite bourgeois intelligentsia, who would later join or ally with the working class. Holy shit, I love that.
Dude, that's the hit right there,
that
right?
That fucking rocks.
Doesn't that fucking rule?
That rocks, dude. Shit, man.
Yeah.
That fucking rocks.
I know. It's like, join us.
We have to join, yeah.
Yo, hey, join us.
Join the working class, bitch. That's all it takes. Join the working class.
You're petite anyway.
Oof. This thesis introduced the Maoist emphasis on the re-education of intellectuals to the sphere of French painting, while also acknowledging the limitations of propagandistic figurative art. In the same argument, precipitated by the effective collapse of Support Surfass's, in response to the essay, the primarily Nice-based members Dollaire, Sauter, Valency, Villat, issued a statement announcing their scission. I'm not familiar with that word.
Scission
from the group due to Parisian faction's dogmatic political claims. Unshaken by the mutiny for the remaining Paris members of the group, particularly Devade, Maoism became even more a guiding force. In 1971,
oh my God.
He shifted from using acrylic to ink, staining sections of canvas with a single color by pouring it onto the area bordered by a ruler.
in the south of France, surrounded by fields of lavender.
Holy shit.
No, whatever.
This was motivated by the importance of ink in Chinese art. That fucking rocks. Both in classical painting and in hand-painted propaganda posters of the Cultural Revolution. But, as Devade explained, transposed into the frame of Western painting. This transposition was also theoretically enacted in Peinture Cassée Theoretiques, which read the forms of Chinese painting throughout Marxist but also Freudian categories. Thus, just as theory had mediated between political and artistic practice for support surfaces, it now served as a means of translation between East and West. With its operation, it was crucial to retain the fundamental Althusserian position that only theory could disclose the particular structure of an ideological vehicle and its position within the field of other social practices. If Althusser insisted theory was linked to a class struggle and painting was theoretical practice, then painting was also a mediated form of class struggle, even if this was not immediately apparent. For this to occur, though, textual mediation was needed to make the connection intelligible. Take us home, Lucia.
Okay. The terms of this mediation were laid out most succinctly in the first issue of Peinture Cahier Theoretique. The committee Boulet, Kahn, Devade, and Dazouz ended the opening editorial with a series of five position statements, the first of which read, 1. The dominant bourgeois ideology dialectically reflects the world crisis of the capitalist mode of production, declining imperialism. This crisis, as principal contradiction between capitalism and socialism, can be seized at its secondary ideological level within the very interior of a specific mode of signification, such as painting. Althusser had significantly reformulated his conception of ideology after 1968, extending it beyond a structure of semi-autonomous levels and insisting on its material existence grounded in the practices and discourses of various institutions or apparatuses, e.g. the law, school, the family, media, etc., which ensure the reproduction of their relations of production. Support surface seems, however, to have remained committed to the base superstructure model in which painting belongs to the secondary level of ideology erected upon the elected upon and determined by the relations and forces of production, yet also capable of exerting its own reciprocal specific effectivity upon the economic base. This was premised on the principle of relative autonomy, the notion that as a component of ideology, had its own essence and effectivity, its own specific roles to play within the social whole. According to Althusser, writing in 1962, levels of the superstructure were only determined in the last instance by the economic mode of production and its class relations. Taking the relative nature of that autonomy to an almost extreme degree, Althusser asserted that from the first moment to the last, the lonely hour of the last instance never comes.
In his analysis of the historical juncture known as 60s, Frederick Jamerson argued that it was precisely Althusser's notion of relative or semi-autonomy that encapsulated and often authorized the particular cultural politics of the period by offering means by which to criticize older totalizing narratives. Example, modernism, humanism, economic determinism, on both left and right, while retaining a thread of connection to some notion of structural unity anchored in the last instance. Jameson historicizes this move as a breakdown of the sign as it first proclaims autonomy by rejecting the reverent, for example, in art by negating an external reality or social functionality in the various forms of high modernist abstraction. The object of painting is painting itself, and the works displayed here only refer to themselves. In this scenario, The very refusal of external references guarantees the sign's connection to the social world, which it must retain as ghostly reminder of its own outsider or exterior, since it allows it closure, self-determination, and essential boundary line. The second moment arrives when the rejection of reverent, some external reality to which the work refers, causes another convulsion within the sign in which its material signifiers become only real, the only real thing, as any and all signification is expelled as ideological. For Jameson, this is the moment of incipient postmodernism, but we could equally locate support surfaces at this threshold. The artist's confounded modernist painting's autonomy as ideological precisely in the way it offered the art object as a site for mental projections or oneric wanderings. Their work was intended to prevent that possibility through a variety of tactics that both deconstructed and manifested the signifiers of painting, first and foremost by separating the stretcher and canvas, but also by subjecting both the components to further disassembly or iterative processes. This can be seen, for example, in Louis Kahn's cut canvases, which rectangular sections either hang loose from the wall or lie flat on the ground, or in the exposed wooden stretchers of D'Azuzé that literally lay physical support of the painting bare, a tactic that led further manipulations of the material, such as the creation of flexible wooden fiberglass ladders and grids. This was the form that painting took when its signifiers were liberated from both external reference and ideological signification. The threat, as Jameson saw it, was that this liberation entailed a total dissolution of signs into an endless mass of free-floating signifiers, characteristic of postmodern culture, which is mirrored at the political level by the social dissolution of individuals into a reified identity categories seemingly divorced from the relations of production. For both Jameson and as I've been arguing, support surfaces, Althusser offered a kind of last link between reified signifiers and a social totality, between an increasingly overdetermined superstructure and base. For support surfaces, this was accomplished by treating painting as an object of knowledge, that is, a way of producing knowledge about the painting's specific effectivity at the ideological level within the structure whole.
Woof. Okay, 7. In many ways.
Hang on. How much more do we have?
We have four paragraphs.
This is
four,
it. Four actually, okay. Yeah, this is the end. This is the end.
You do it.
Okay.
Take us home.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay. 7. In many ways, May 68 had been the event that rendered the earlier form of modernist autonomy impossible, compelling artists to confront art's role in class struggle at the level of ideology. Even as May 68 appeared to offer the political manifestation of the experiments in radical theory that had flowered in the mid-1960s, it also presented a crisis. This was particularly the case for Althusserianism, which had staked its epistemological value on an extreme insistence on scientific rigor, that is, on its separation from political practice. The May movement erupted as much from the mounting reaction against Stalinism as it did from hostility to capitalism or the French state. The attack on hierarchy, jubilant celebration of bodily presence, and humanistic emphasis on desire that characterized many forms of expression in 1968 were antithetical to the dogmas of intellectuals or political organizations, and vastly expanded the arena of what was considered political practice. The consequences of the post-May crisis of Althusserianism were widespread. Support Surfaces' embrace of Maoism was also a response to the crisis at the level of theory. Althusser himself abandoned some of his most structuralist premises after 1968 by questioning his earlier distinctions between ideology and science and developing his highly influential theory of ideological state apparatuses, before a series of mental breakdowns culminated in him tragically murdering his wife in 1980. Jesus. Bam, bam. Men. They think too hard.
Men are bad.
Except for the ones I like. However, his anti-humanist counter-assault on the de-Stalinization of the PCF in the wake of 1956 sustained a far-reaching investment in theory that spread beyond philosophy, penetrating the field of cultural production. Support Serfoss's insistence on the material basis of painting hidden behind the ideology of individual expression was one such manifestation. Though, in retrospect, the events of May 1968 seem to have heralded the eventual decline of the Communist Party. In their immediate aftermath, the lesson appeared to be almost the opposite for many observers. Only an organization as powerful as the PCF was capable of unleashing or halting the mass of workers, determining whether they would produce what Althusser termed the ruptural unity of circumstances necessary for overthrowing the ruling class of the nation. For many intellectuals and artists on the left, the project of renewing communism, opened up by May 68, involved a return to Marx, a project for which Althusser was the philosophical torchbearer. However, the window for this possibility seemed to shut around 1972 with the formation of the Union de la Gauche and the PCF's embrace of a common program that abandoned core Marxist tenets. Support Serfoss effectively dissolved, and its artists, like many former French Maoists, turned fully away from Marxism and towards new philosophical offerings that emerged over the course of the decade. D'Azur's reflecting on the interval between 1968 and 1972 from the vantage of the early 2000s, at a nadir of Marxism's intellectual appeal, explains Support Serfoss politics thus. Marxism was still a progressive doctrine for the working class and intellectuals. This is why many artists whose convictions were progressive, which is usually the case with avant-gardes, embraced these ideas. Among these were artists from the Support Serfoss group at different degrees and depending on their personalities. It is therefore hardly surprising that the group should have referred to historical Marxism and its philosophy, dialectical materialism.
Damn, dude.
Boom.
That's for everyone.
Thank you all for sticking it out and hearing how painting has its own battles and, like, really intense ideological differences.
Yeah.
It's important, and the market will strip it away from the things you make and try to sell it the same way they try to sell everything.
Yeah, and people will wholesale dismiss art and artists as, like, anti-Marxist in general somehow. Yeah. And it's just fucked up and not true.
Yeah, like, these people fought in wars.
Yeah.
That were for liberation. And, I mean, half of them did.
Yeah. I mean, be skeptical for sure.
But yeah.
Just know that
it's a 50-50 chance that the artist that you're talking to has actually been through some shit. So give them a shot. They might be living, I don't know, experientially.
It's true.
And making things.
That's a great way to end. Thank you, Lucia. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Lots of fun.
Bye. I get if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. If you just drive a truck, I care if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care, cause I just love your company. Let's have fun, let's have fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, let's have fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, lots of fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, lots of fun.